With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
That's good.
I think so.
That element of our game is just, those are free throws, dude.
Yeah, but sometimes they're like Reggie Jackson free throws, sometimes they're like Andre Drummond free throws.
They're more Reggie than they are Andre, for sure.
They are, but once they become Andre free throws, it gets in my head a little bit.
And then you're but then in the clutch, though, that's when you start knocking them down. Damn, dude. We're talking Andre Drummond free throws right now.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. He was traded.
Yes, he was.
All right. So this is Inside the Cylinder, your go-to Detroit Pistons podcast. We got all of our new episodes on DetroitBadBoys.com, on lineups.com/podcast, and on Twitter. You can find our new episodes. @InsideTheCylndr. This is David Fernandez, joined as always by my co-host Joey Mack.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, David?
Not much, man. You know, this is gonna
How's
be
Pistons Twitter these days.
Pistons Twitter, dude. I mean, honestly, I have not been tweeting as much this season because I think my soul's been crushed.
Yeah, that's fair.
I check in
Spend
on
time
it.
In other ways.
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of in like the same sort of haze, I guess you can say. I don't know. It's not a happy place. I wouldn't describe it as happy.
Yeah, you can't even like anxious watch like you would have last year, the year before, thinking that like just doing the playoff math to see like what it would take. Now it's just like that doesn't exist. Now you're scouting like Louisiana Tech. Like point guards.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be looking at more like tankathon numbers here coming into like March and April of where they're at when it comes to the draft than anything else. And, you know, it's a weird feeling to truly not care whether they win or lose a game. But it is still weird. Like the fan in me doesn't root for, like the rational side of me understands that they should lose out the rest of the season. But the fan in me, you know, doesn't like seeing my team lose. But it's just something that, at least for the rest of this season, we're going to have to get used to.
It is liberating to not be emotionally invested in the Pistons winning or losing, and instead being more focused on player development. I do agree with you. Like, I'm not the type of person, if I'm going to watch a game, it's really hard for me to watch and root for them to lose. What I would be rooting for, which we've touched on in the past, is strictly younger player development and seeing them play well. So if that's in a win, that's okay. If it's in a loss, that's okay too. But, you know, kind of just like realigning focus with like what your priorities are in the Pistons, because clearly the playoffs aren't it this year.
No, and I think it would feel a lot different if we were coming into this draft class and the word on the street was, because, you know, you and I aren't big college guys when it comes to following the game, or draft guys in that sense. But if you were going into the draft and, you know, there's a lot of buzz about how there's going to be, you know, a super deep draft and there's like a lot of great players that are coming out this year, you know, I think it would be a little bit easier to sort of get in that sort of process mindset, you know, where, you know, they got Ben Simmons, they got Joel Embiid, you know, they got really good players in those, in a few of their, you know, terrible seasons. But for Detroit right now, it's like, you know, I mean, all the word on the street is that it's not that deep of a draft class. So that makes it even a little bit more like, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't necessarily change anything from, you know, the fact that this team should just be losing games anyways, but it does make it less exciting in the loss, you know, for these, you know, ping pong balls, essentially.
Yeah, you're not looking at like an ultimate franchise game changer like a Zion or I guess Wiggins was perceived to be like a game changer back in the day, which he didn't end up being.
But, yeah, Luka Doncic, you know.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But so right now, I mean, just to kind of set the stage, this we're recording this pretty late on Tuesday night. The Pistons are 19-37. Yes, you've heard that correctly. And you probably know that. And they're coming off of, I believe, their fourth straight loss to the Charlotte Hornets this year. And I think they've lost 10 in a row to the Hornets, which says a lot about this team. They've lost 9 of their last 11 games. And before we get into the big stuff, Joe, did you just want to mention there was some interesting comments that Dwayne Casey had about one of our most exciting prospects, Sekou Doumbouya, who did not have a great game yesterday, and hasn't had a great, you know, last few weeks. But yeah, there was definitely something that was noteworthy, and I would consider it Pistons news.
Yeah, his numbers and percentages have significantly dipped recently after he went on a pretty good scoring run, and Dwayne Casey raised some concerns about mostly just his mentality and approach. And we know he's a young kid, I think still just 19 years old, but his comments were, and I quote, "I'm very concerned with Sekou. I'm very concerned in the fact that he's a young kid, his outlook, his demeanor. He should be having the most fun of anybody, have all the girls, have all the fun, whatever you want to do, everything. I mean, enjoy life, play basketball. You're playing in the NBA, have fun." This is still a Casey quote here too. That's the thing that bothers me. The intensity, the effort has to come from our young guys, and he's one of our young guys. You're going to make mistakes as a young player, but lack of intensity shouldn't be one of them. Lack of passion, the joy of playing, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I know there's a culture barrier, but he has to continue to play hard and play with passion. End of quote. So that is shining a light on, I guess, the observations of Dwayne Casey and some of Sekou's behavior on and off the floor. So he is a younger player, and you do expect a little bit of that, but he mentioned being very concerned. David, does that make you very concerned as a result?
Yeah, I mean, it makes me concerned just in the sense that you don't want your one of your possible pillars for this organization moving forward to be in, you know, not the right mental space. I don't necessarily know what that all entails, but it's essentially just not being happy. You know, you would want him to be, as Dwayne Casey said, having a really good time out there, you know, just enjoying playing basketball, enjoying being in the States. I do agree that there is probably, you know, something to do with, you know, English not being his first language. And yeah, I would assume that'd be difficult. That would be difficult for me, you know, even if I was making a lot of money, just to be, you know, thrown into a country where I wasn't necessarily comfortable in being myself. So, you know, I do have some concerns. You really, you know, a worst case scenario would be, you know, like a Darko Milicic type of thing where you just don't like the game of basketball and, you know, you're a professional player who a team's invested a lot into. I don't want to like put that sort of, you know, that into the ethos, but you know, that does concern me for sure.
Yeah, it's certainly not what you want to hear. And, you kind of notice with his nonverbals on the floor that he does get frustrated. He does seem to expect more of himself. And so I think there's just a maturity hump that he needs to get over. And at the end of the day, anytime your coach is telling you to have more fun and chase more girls, like, you got to take that to heart, especially if you're in the NBA and you're making a ton of money. So hopefully that's something that's raises an eyebrow for Sekou, and he can, you know, let loose a little bit more and have a bit more fun and just focus on the learning aspects of the game as opposed to the results.
Yeah, having all the girls was a little heavy-handed by Dwayne there. I don't know if he was like going blast in the past or something from you know, his playing days.
Think, well, he is a coach known for his player development, so who knows what the method to that magic is. I mean, you just gotta trust him, I guess.
If it's just like some weird like college recruiting style thing where I don't need to go down that road. excuse me, but I mean, let's just bring it up, man. The biggest story of this past week was the Andre Drummond trade, and we're going to get into this at length. He was traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Brandon Knight, former Piston, John Henson, J-Mac's boy from North Carolina, and a 2023 second-round pick, either Cleveland's or Golden State's, whichever is worse. And I put a lot of money that it's going to be Golden State's going to have the worst of those two, in the sense that it's going to be a lower pick. Now, some other notes from the trade deadline. They did not move Markieff Morris, Derrick Rose, or Langston Galloway, who a lot of people were speculating, and I definitely assumed a couple of those guys to at least be moved. And then also, one last tidbit, they did decline a trade offer from the Boston Celtics for Christian Wood. You know, I mean, that's really the trade deadline, you know, kind of summed up. Joe, any, I mean, we're going to talk about all that, actually. I guess, any thoughts about them not moving Christian Wood?
I am happy that they didn't trade Christian Wood. Because, he's a good young player. We were looking to move Andre, so what's the point in moving both of your young centers? And I'm just not sure what Christian Wood's value is on the trade market. It's his value's in probably higher to us than it would be to anyone else. So might as well just stay put with a young player like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. But yeah, let's talk the Andre stuff first. So, you know, just so I wanted to just mention him in, you know, some of his accolades and some of his rankings, because he was, you know, with the Pistons for his entire career. And he's put up some pretty gaudy numbers, as we've seen on a night-to-night basis. You know, some of his franchise records includes first in offensive boards, first in rebounds per game, second in total rebounds, third all-time in blocks, fifth all-time in steals. And I was surprised by this. He was 10th all-time in field goals. Some of his accomplishments, he's a two-time All-Star. His team made the playoffs twice. All-NBA third team 2015-16. He won the rebound title 3 years, and he's definitely going to win it this year. And he was an all-rookie team back when things were, well, not great back then, but they might have been looking up. I'm not necessarily sure. Everything's been kind of crazy. But Joe, do you have any like positive words or reflections on him as a player? Any memories or anything that you know kind of come to mind when you think about Andre Drummond and his Piston career?
Yeah, as a player and an ambassador to the city of Detroit, I do think that he embraced the city and the community, and was vocal about interacting with locals and just trying to be a part of the culture in Detroit, which was very cool. From a player standpoint, you know, you just listed off all of those accolades, which a ton of players can't claim to have even half of those. So he is the player that he is, and brought a lot of great moments and fun games to Pistons fans. Wasn't as consistent as we were always like hoping for him to be, but at the end of the day, that's not necessarily his fault. You know, sometimes the fit just isn't perfect and you don't go to the right team at the right time. Like if he was to be you know, on the Clippers instead of DeAndre Jordan, with you know, three offensive players around him, that would be a better fit for a player like him. Instead, he was kind of thrust into this scoring role and tried to figure out a low post game, and had a musical chairs assortment of coaches at the helm. So you know, I think it was just kind of a chaotic experience, and for him to figure out his full personal identity on the floor, it's taking him a long time to get to that point. At the end of the day, you can't really say anything bad necessarily about his character. He was a pretty fun-loving guy. Reggie Jackson, you know, only has good things to say about him. His teammates have good things to say about him. If he seems to not have the best nonverbal behavior, as mentioned before, a lot of times that was just because he cared too much and was frustrated with his play. So nothing really bad to say about Andre. Just wish him the best in the future. You know, we appreciated what he did for the team. Unfortunately, his legacy isn't going to be that glowing just due to the fact that they didn't really win any games and, you know, didn't win any playoff games. So, you know, that's, I guess, in a nutshell, really my reflection on him. Anything positively that, you know, that you can take away, or any memories or reflections that you personally have?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there earlier when, you know, one thing that we did talk about Andre, you know, we've nitpicked his game. You know, this is a team podcast, so that's what we're here to do, is, you know, talk about players on the Detroit Pistons in depth. And a lot of the areas that the Pistons have asked and fans have asked Andre Drummond to concentrate on or to shy away from were things that he was, you know, kind of mostly doing, honestly, throughout the progression of his career. Obviously, the free throws being one of the biggest elements to that. You know, he definitely improved those. He was able to stay on the floor in the fourth quarter. You know, the post-ups, while that was definitely something that was coming from a coaching strategy, you know, it definitely did go away. They did move Andre Drummond around the court quite a bit. You know, he was sort of the hub of the offense before they acquired Blake. You bring in Blake, you know, he has to kind of find his footing within, you know, playing against another superstar in the front court, playing with another superstar. And, you know, I do appreciate all those things that he was able to do on the court. You know, I think that, and you know, when it comes to what you were saying about, the, you know, the city, he definitely did seem to love Detroit. He mentioned it in his Twitter response, where he was apparently blindsided by the Pistons with this trade, and he showed nothing. He said nothing but positive things about the city of Detroit and his love for Detroit. So, you know, I do appreciate that as well. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy, you know, after his long time here with the Pistons, only one winning season. You know, last year they went 500. Two playoff appearances, both, you know, they were swept both times. You know, I think that it's unfortunate that so many injuries have led to this team not being, you know, what they should have been and could have been on the floor. This season being, you know, clearly the biggest shining example of that. But, you know, he wasn't one of those guys. You know, he was one of the guys that was always readily available, and that was definitely something that I appreciated as well. So, you know, I too have nothing but positive things to say about Andre Drummond. But, you know, I one thing that I was definitely upset for him is that he has to go to Cleveland. Like, he's going to a possible rebuild situation, and who knows what that's gonna, you know, sort of look like for him in the future when it comes to the next few years.
Agreed. And I was excited at the prospect of him going to a playoff team, maybe the Clippers, and being the, you know, the fourth option and being really, like, able to settle into a role and possibly showcase, like, what he can do when he's completely focused on that and you know, audition for another contract. So it is sad to see him buried in Cleveland. But what was your initial reaction to the trade? Was it relief that we're finally moving forward from that era and seeming to embark on a rebuild? Or was it sadness that he's gone? Or was it frustration that the return was a couple potato chips? Or, you know, what was it that you were feeling when you heard that news?
You know, honestly, it was something that it was really confusing, because it just felt like it was such a necessary thing to have happen for the Pistons to be able to move forward. And as I just said over that rant, that, you know, this wasn't all on Andre, obviously. But he was one of the only guys that you were able to move and to actually move his contract and not give away, you know, additional assets. You know, that's not going to be the case for Blake Griffin, at least right now. So, you know, it definitely made sense from like a, okay, clearly Andre Drummond is not going to be a part of this future. And I think that is sort of a sigh of relief in the sense that it wasn't working with Andre here. And hopefully he goes on to greener pastures and Detroit's able to make themselves somewhat of a respectable organization in the near future. I mean, it was definitely upsetting. I did think back to the fact that, you know, all those rumors that we had heard a few years ago about Stan Van Gundy and his that he had a trade lined up for Andre Drummond that was apparently nixed by Tom Gores. That is something that was like a little frustrating just because like the return was so poor. It was clearly the case that they were selling on Andre Drummond at one of his lowest points, even though he had a pretty productive year. So that was frustrating, but all things considered, it's like, you know, it just felt necessary at the end of the day.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's refreshing to finally turn that page and instead of have that like Andre background theme next year, focus on the younger guys and the you know, the new Pistons cohort that we're going to be putting together and hopefully developing a new culture. And it's, you know, it's a coaching staff that like didn't draft a lot of these guys and they're starting to put their fingerprint on this squad. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing like what they can do. And also I mean, you touched on it a little bit with like the frustration with not trading him earlier for a better return. That has been a problem with Detroit sports teams over, you know, the course of the last 5 to 10 years in general. It seems to constantly happen with the Tigers just messing that up and the Red Wings screwing it up and, you know, now the Pistons. And it's just unfortunate to hear trade chatter like all the time and hear like kind of fun, sexy trades that don't come through. And then at the end of the day, you get rid of a pretty good player for the sake of getting rid of them, not really focusing on any sort of return. So that is unfortunate, but it's nice to focus on the future of the Pistons without Andre, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's just it's not necessarily 100% centered around Andre Drummond, but just more so in the sense of the entire league. It's a statement on the state of the bigs in the NBA. You know, Andre Drummond's a two-time All-Star. He was an All-Star like a couple of seasons ago. You know, he's a guy that's putting up damn near 18 points per game and nearly 15 rebounds or almost 16 rebounds. I don't have his numbers pulled up in front of me per game. And but you know, he's not when you're not as just amazingly defensive of like a big as like a Rudy Gobert, or you're not obviously no one's Nikola Jokic, but his inside outside game, his offensive game is just outstanding. Joel Embiid is just like a force on offense, you know, better on the block than he is from three. But you know, those guys are just game changing when it comes to, you know, either their defensive or offensive abilities. Andre Drummond's kind of like a poor man's all of those guys. He's definitely the best rebounder of the bunch, but he's not, you know, he's just not good enough essentially to be at the pay that he is at and at the pay that he might be expecting to be. So I think that that is a big reason why teams were cold about giving Detroit any type of really valuable assets or young players in this type of deal. So, you know, I think that that is, it just seems like a lot of teams have been able to fill their center positions adequately with a couple guys that are making like $7 million a year. And, you know, you don't want to give up all of your cap space or, you know, $28 million next season, which Detroit did not want to pay. And who knows what he's going to be targeting after that season for your center, you know, because that's just not where the league is right now, unless you have a guy like a Jokic, an Embiid, an Anthony Davis, and, you know, even Gobert. I mean, I would put him up there, but I don't, he's I would definitely have all those three guys I just mentioned before Gobert, but it's just a testament to where everything's at right now.
Yeah, and a testament to his one strength being rebounding, not being as valuable as all of those other strengths, like shooting or passing or protecting the rim, all extremely important in order to spread the floor and be an anchor on defense. Whereas rebounding, like, you can find ways to strategize team round rebounding. And, you know, now we're seeing point guards who get 10 or 11 rebounds a game. There's a quicker pace, and so there's just more rebounds in general. What total value does that bring? And, you know, what kind of team do you need around a player like Andre in order to highlight the rebounding as best as possible? Because at the end of the day, rebounding doesn't put points on the board for your team, and it doesn't necessarily take points off the board for the other team. So it's one of those weird statistics that can be overrated, I guess, in a certain sense. That highlights the fact that, like, you know, a 7-foot center these days isn't just a big warm body to get rebounds and protect the rim, like, decently, as you mentioned. Not for that much money. Exactly. And earn a ton of money. You can pay a guy just like we can pay Christian Wood, maybe $8 to $10 million a year. Does need to improve his rebounding, but how much of a drop off is Christian Wood for potentially $18 million less a year?
Yeah, you can plug a lot of other holes. And honestly, areas for Detroit that they just clearly have not had the caliber players that you need to be ultra competitive in the modern NBA when it comes to, you know, small forwards and point guards. You know, they've been severely lacking in that category, at least consistently over the last few years. So it does seem like Detroit finally woke up to the modern game, essentially, in that sense. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do. That's definitely a scary part. But before we get into that, I did just want to mention some, like, non-Andre stuff. Do you have any other Andre things that come to mind here, Joe?
That pretty much does it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot more that I have inside of me about Andre. It's just that I feel like I've already rambled enough at this point that I'm not going to find the most clearest thought. But some of the non-Andre stuff, the stuff that was definitely confusing to me, I'm also not picking up phone calls, making phone calls. I'm not working for the league or for the Pistons, for that matter. I was definitely confused that they did not move Markieff Morris and at least or Langston Galloway. I think the Derrick Rose thing we've kind of talked at length about, it makes some sense that they didn't move him. But Markieff Morris and Langston Galloway are not going to be on this team next year. I mean, I'm damn near positive Markieff Morris is going to decline that player option and Langston Galloway is a free agent. It just seems like those guys had played well enough this year to get you a low second round pick or something of that nature. And I'm assuming that there were just no trades because it doesn't make sense for this team this season to hold on to those guys, just knowing that it truly doesn't matter if you have them or not because you're not trying to make the playoffs. In fact, you're probably better off if you lose as many games as possible.
Well, I believe Stefanski was quoted saying that with a random second round pick, like in the 50s, you don't know who that player is, whereas the player that you'd be trading, I think this is referencing Markieff Morris, Markieff. Whereas you know who the guy is that you're trading. So basically, he was saying that, like, you are getting rid of value that you understand very well and getting, like, a massive question mark, which was an interesting comment because it's true, but it's also like, well, you're going to likely lose that player who you know can perform for you. Maybe the value doesn't necessarily match up, but you're getting something for someone who you otherwise might not get anything for if they do walk away in free agency. So it does make me question whether or not they would consider re-signing him if he does decline his player option. That would kind of be an interesting transaction. But I guess there's a possibility there. I'm very surprised that they kept Markieff, Derrick Rose, and Langston Galloway, all three of them. I did figure they would keep one of them just because I know they value veteran presence and leadership. D. Rose got hurt at not an ideal time, and he has that handshake agreement with the front office and ownership that we've mentioned before regarding him agreeing to a trade or not. So that certainly played a factor, I'm sure. But then, like, Langston Galloway as well. Like, wouldn't the Sixers be willing to throw us a second-round pick for Galloway? I mean,
that's what I was thinking the entire time.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, that's it. I mean, Langston Galloway, to me, I mean, when you mention, like, the veteran leadership type of stuff, he seems to be, like, the most professional Piston, just from what I've seen on social media and following this team over the last few years. But with that being said, I don't know. The Markieff stuff still confuses me. Like, if they re-signed him after this year, or, I mean, I guess he does have the option of picking up that player option, but if they do re-sign him, I will certainly question what the hell this team's trying to do next year. The Rose thing definitely makes sense to me. You know, you possibly could have traded him a bit earlier before the trade deadline and got a much better package, but now you're kind of dealing with the give and pull of Derrick Rose. You know, he might be injured, he might not be injured. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of confused, but I mean, I don't really have anything else to say. I guess we'll see a little bit more come this off season, but I mean, that I just 1000% agree that it just seemed like the Sixers did make some moves. I mean, there were a lot of moves that happened this trade deadline. It might've just been a situation that Detroit didn't pull the trigger quick enough. And, you know, all these other teams ended up making, you know, moves and auxiliary moves. Like, the Sixers did make a couple small moves, and at that point maybe they were just done dealing, and then you kind of miss the boat. So I guess that's another takeaway that could have happened, but I'm not sure. I mean, I guess we won't know, at least for the near future.
Yeah, there's also a rumor of Tony Snell getting traded to the Houston Rockets at one point, which didn't happen. So yeah, I guess there was some excitement that we had all of these potential trade chips for at least like a second rounders and to stack up some draft picks and create some excitement for future, you know, drafts and players and things of that sort. So it kind of it did overall feel like a letdown to, at the end of the day, simply get rid of Andre, get some random second round pick that might just, like, you know, never exist for some odd reason.
Yeah, some strap and stash player.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, Brandon Knight and John Henson, just like, that's what we ended up with. So it does feel anticlimactic. But I guess that's just what it is, man. There's not much you can do. And you hear all these rumors like, oh, Tony Snell could get like a high second round pick. And it's like, sweet. Like, yeah, I would love that. But that's just some crazy thing on a rumor mill. And we earlier heard maybe a first-round pick for Andre Drummond, but that was just like a rumor mill thing. So, like, those speculations do go to your head, and you start dreaming out these ideal scenarios that don't happen. And so, you know, I guess this is just what we're dealt with.
I remember what I wanted to say, because I wanted to sort of counter what Ed Stefanski was saying, and especially if he was, you know, saying that in reference to Markieff Morris. You don't trade your players for picks because you want to keep all the picks and draft all the players. Like, you trade them so you can have, you know, other trade pieces for the future, right? Like, these second round picks sometimes move hands four or five times before a player is selected for a team. So, you know, it just seems like something that when you're Detroit, especially with Detroit having traded away second round picks in the past, I'm not necessarily sure what their full outlet looks like. They're a team that should be in the business of acquiring assets, at least for this just dead season that we're going to be witnessing over the next couple of months. So I don't know.
That's a really good point.
But anyways, you know, I guess we don't need to talk too much about second round picks that we're never going to be. One thing that I did hear is that there could be some buyout candidates from the Pistons. And the main one that stood out was Reggie Jackson. You could possibly see Lacy Galloway being a buyout type of contender as well. So you can go let them play for, you know, a possible contender. Joe, do you have any thoughts? Like, I mean, how would you feel if, let's say, if the Pistons bought out Reggie Jackson and he went to some other team for the playoffs?
I would be okay with that. I would be curious to know whether or not Reggie Jackson would want a buyout, because he is currently auditioning for another contract. He's going to get the minutes, he's going to get the looks, and he's going to get the shots with the Pistons, just because we have a lack of other options. So what are his prospects if he goes to another team and only gets 12 minutes off the bench a night to show what he has left in the tank? Part of me feels like he's going to take the 15 mil or whatever, 18 mil that he's owed for this, or that he would make in total this season, and try to show off, you know, where he's at after his recent injury and rehab. So part of me feels like he might want to kind of stick around for that reason. But from a Pistons standpoint, I wouldn't mind at all buying him out. And then, I mean, we would be really bad. We'd be really bad. But I guess who cares at this point?
Yeah. I mean, you give Jordan Bone a little bit more of a look, even though he hasn't looked good at all from what I've seen him so far when he's played for the Pistons, not the
Drive. Kind of a theme on this podcast.
Yeah. I would be happy for Reggie if he was able to go to a team and, you know, play for a playoff contender, you know, especially knowing that things have not been great with, you know, the way that fans have treated Reggie over the years. And, you know, I think he definitely wants a fresh start. But like you said, Joe, I mean, I think that's what is a big reason why the Pistons were able to sign God damn it, dude. I'm just blanking. Shooter from last year that we signed from the Heat.
Wayne Ellington.
Went to UNC. Yeah, Wayne Ellington. God Wayne damn Ellington. It. Sorry. But no, he was, you know, he was bought out, and the Pistons were able to sign him, and he signed with the team where he was gonna get the most run. And the team that was going to guarantee him the most run, because he was looking forward to another contract. So it does make a lot of sense that Reggie would want to stay and, you know, be the starter for the foreseeable future, maybe until Derrick Rose gets back, and, you know, try to get that next contract, because he has looked pretty good for the most part, you know, since he has returned. So that does make a lot of sense, and, you know, good point there.
Yeah, and I guess this does beg the question of what this all means for the team moving forward. We still have a big contract locked up in Blake Griffin. We still will have Derrick Rose next year, Luke Kennard. So we'll have some decent players. It's not like it's a complete break it down and then build it up. So, you know, are they going to plan on sucking and trying to get as good of a draft pick as possible? Or is there some room? And, man, this is a painful question to ask ourselves, because I feel like we do it every year. Like, is there a room to be like, you know, maybe a 6 or 7 seed next year while also developing young talent? David, do you have any thoughts on that? Like, a direction you would want them to go, or like where you think that they would like to go?
Yeah, I mean, the Pistons right now have roughly $35 million projected in cap space going into next year that they'll be able to play around with this offseason, which honestly kind of terrifies me. You know, we've just seen this team, whenever they've had free dollars, lots of times other than this past offseason, seem to really have wasted that money, especially when they have a lot of money. So, you know, I'm not in the market. I don't necessarily want to see them throw the bag at Fred VanVleet, for instance, and then just try to run this thing back with Blake Griffin, Derrick Rose, all the guys you just mentioned. But also, I don't know how bad you can really suck if you have like a healthy Blake Griffin, Derrick Rose, and Kennard, and everyone's, you know, if they're playing well and they stay healthy next year, which is a big if, I don't necessarily know how bad they're going to be. It seems like they'll be like a, you know, like they have been the last few years, like a 9-12 seed type of team, or 8-12 seed, I guess you can say. I mean, one thing looking at the Eastern Conference this year, well, Brooklyn's definitely getting Kevin Durant back, so they're going to be a lot better than they are this year. But Orlando sucks. Like, it seems like a lot of these teams could, bad teams in the Eastern Conference, once again, will be able to compete for the 8th seed. I don't see the East getting that much better. So I don't necessarily know what they're going to do, but I'm concerned. That's what I can say. It's like, I'm concerned that they are going to, you know, just put all their eggs in this basket again and, you know, just try to, like, build around the last 2 years of Blake, when it's clear that they should be looking further into the future, not just, you know, the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, and that's a very valid concern to have. But like, how do you not sort of build around him for the next 2 years? In terms of, he doesn't have a very tradable contract because he does have those injury issues. You know, a guy at his age with his talent wants to win. And so how do you balance that? I mean, I'm not really too sure. I mean, Luke's going to be 24, 25 next year. So he's going to be in his prime. And then Svi's shown that he's a very capable player. Snell wants to win. And Christian Wood will be coming off a nice fresh contract. So, you know, I think you definitely try to stay competitive. And as you mentioned, the East is just so trash at the bottom of it. So you're not necessarily you're not looking next year at like a top three overall pick if players are healthy. You're looking at, if things go really poorly, you know, a lot like a late lottery pick, and if things go well, like a pick in the late teens if you make the playoffs. So I think really like the main focus should be to, if you are signing guys to contracts, like try to keep them to short contracts ideally. I would be really nervous to throw the bag at Fred VanVleet. I think he's an awesome locker room culture, sort of gritty player type of guy and a good influence for the younger players. But just our history of having money to throw around, as you mentioned, and in overpaying guys, frightens me. So, I think
fringe guys too, right? Like Charlie Villanueva, Ben Gordon. Obviously, the John Lohr thing was just a disaster, but there's just like such a sore spot of
Josh,
like,
Smith.
I mean, Reggie Jackson too, right? You know, Josh Smith. You know, there's just these guys where they're not
like not all stars.
Yeah, they're not all stars. They're not all stars, and you know, you throw the bag at them, and then all of a sudden you just kind of just hit the reset button on where this team, not the reset button, like the refresh button, in the sense of like, oh yep, same thing, you know, same webpage I was looking at. It's the Pistons, and they're, you know, a 36 win team. So I don't know. I mean, one thing with that money I am happy about is that it does seem like the Pistons are focused on re-signing Christian Wood, because he's young, you know. I wouldn't mind locking up Svi, you know, as well. It seems like you can keep some of the internal guys under some fair contracts. And then maybe you are able to move them in the future for something that's really great. But I would be concerned.
Sorry to cut you off. But also can focus a priority on paying Luke, maybe. I mean, if he can consistently play like he played for stretches this year, then he's worth a decent contract. And as opposed to overpaying a player from another team in free agency, just pay the guy that you have developed internally and give him a contract, and maybe overpay him a little bit. But he's definitely looks like a sharpshooter who can put up an efficient 20 points a game for your team. So instead of dangling him on the trade market, because his skill set is ideal for any team trying to, make a playoff push or make a championship push. Focus that money on just funneling it back into the guys that we already have, and then trying to build you know, around them with better draft picks and a couple guys, you know, in free agency outside of that.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to have to do their research on his medicals. You know, he's missed a lot of games recently, but I was not in the camp for moving Luke Kennard. But Joe, I guess if you were to guess, just, you know, just for a final point, what do you think Detroit tries to do? You know, not necessarily what players are they trying to sign, but in sense of like their strategy for next year. Do you think they're just like, let's go for it, let's see what we can do? Or do you think this Andre Drummond thing was more just a signal that, hey, this is going to be part of the process of, you know, a five-year type of rebuild situation?
I think it's going to be the former option. And I think they're going to try to...
I do too.
I think they're going to try to win it.
I'm not thrilled about it.
That's fair. But if we think back to Dwayne Casey at Toronto, I remember the year before Andrew Wiggins came out of college at Kansas. I can't believe I referenced him twice in this podcast, but you know, there's like a tank for Wiggins motto, especially in Canada, with the Raptors being in Toronto, because they didn't have a great team and people thought that they were gonna, you know, be one of the worst teams in the league. Well, they didn't tank. They made a couple trades. I think they made the playoffs that year. And they sort of reloaded with that Dwayne Casey team, and he developed all this internal talent. And although they didn't have like that phenomenal of a roster, that great of guys, they never just gave up in order to get a higher draft pick. So I think the same mentality is going to be applied to this Pistons team, and there's going to be a focus on winning. And it could get really, really messy. I think a lot of this probably depends, as it always does, on health. So,
yeah.
TBD.
And one thing that was mentioned that I heard on like a podcast when they were talking about those Toronto Raptors teams was it hasn't worked out for Toronto for the most part when they've tried to acquire guys in free agency that weren't from their team, that weren't part of their development. Damari Carroll, for instance, you know, they threw him a fat contract, and it just didn't work out for them. They were able to get out from under it and, you know, do the right things in order to build that championship team. But at the same time, they built their team through trades, through the draft, through development. And hopefully Detroit, by, you know, keeping Christian Wood, by not trading away Luke Kennard, is going to be able to go that route. And hopefully Siku's able to, you know, have some fun out there and, you know, just enjoy the States and enjoy playing basketball. But, yeah, man, I mean, I don't really have anything else.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for me as well.
All right, guys. Well, sorry. I knew this one was going to be a little rambly, but, you know, it's a big app. Inside the Cylinder, DetroitBadBoys.com, lineups.com/podcast. This is David Fernandez and my co-host Joey Mack. We out.
Peace.